KIOS-FM presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, August 22, 2002, for broadcast at this time. Today we'll hear a panel discussion on the topic, Local Preparedness for Terrorism. The members of the panel include Carol Allensworth, Division Chief of the Douglas County Health Department, Steve Lee, Director of the Douglas County Emergency Management Agency, Pat Lenahan, Chairwoman of the Omaha Metropolitan Medical Response Team, and Brian Sorensen, Battalion Chief in the Special Operations Bureau of the Omaha Fire Department. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Dale Munson, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our monthly Omaha Press Club Forum. I'm Dale Munson, a member of the Press Club Education Committee, the host group for these forums. And because we invite involvement from our audience, paper and pencils hopefully are located, are they? Good. At each table, we encourage you to write plainly your questions for our panel members, and they'll be picked up, and I'll present them during the second half of the hour to our panel members. Since September 11th, our nation has been on a heightened alert for follow-up attacks of terrorism. Locally, what with the revamped and enhanced strategic command at nearby Offutt Air Force Base, one can speculate that the Omaha metro area may well be on the terrorists' list of targets. Should a terrorist attack occur, how would our community respond? What preparations have been made for such a possibility? Our four guests today have been busily involved since 9/11 and perhaps well before in providing positive responses to these questions. Following their introductions, each will present an overview of their respective responsibilities and how they mesh into the overall preparedness plan. Our speakers today are Steve Lee, Director of Douglas County Emergency Management Agency, Carol Allensworth, Division Chief of the Douglas County Health Department, Pat Lenahan, Chair of the Omaha Metropolitan Medical Response System, and Brian Sorensen, Battalion Chief, Special Operations Bureau of the Omaha Fire Department. And speaking first is Brian Sorensen.
Thanks, Dale, for that fine introduction there. This group of people I'm associated with is a great group of people here, from Steve all the way over here to Carol. We've been together here, or at least I've been with them only a little over a year, and they've been together before that. But we're part of a big county group that's just very taking this to heart and is moving forward to more or less help the people in our community, help as far as the groups, fire departments, the health department, all that, kind of come together as a huge group and be part of a response. And myself, being with the Omaha Fire Department, the Special Operations Bureau, my responsibilities are a little bit different than the typical fire department battalion chief. I sit in a small office out with my hazardous materials unit out in South Omaha down there, and I cover things like rapid intervention in case somebody's trapped in a burning building. How do we get them out quickly? The hazardous materials, how do we respond to that? The spills, chemicals, trench rescue, high angle rescue, where the guys that dangle off the building on ropes and stuff, and we cover radiological emergencies as far as radioactivity if something spilled in an accident. And last but not least, we call it weapons of mass destruction, which is basically the reason I guess I'm here. Basically, the fire department, my job is just to oversee that, be an advisor to the fire chief, make sure that we do some strategic planning for the fire department to guide him and the assistant chiefs and any of the fire battalion chiefs out in the area of the city. In the event that we do have an event, my job is just basically strictly guidance, know who to call, not only at the city level for help, but to know who to call at the state level, the federal level, and how to interact with those agencies so that, one, we can actively participate, do the right job, perform together as a group so that we mesh and blend, and that everybody comes together as this big, huge plan, and it doesn't turn into chaos, even though we know it probably will be. That's basically my job, let alone to find funding for this, to attempt to locate resources, especially in a time that our city's in right now, as to how do I fund the equipment? Where do I look? Be part of our community plan. Basically, the fire department, we cover 141.6 square miles, which is a lot. We handle all the city of Omaha, plus the Millard Suburban Fire District. We operate the only hazardous materials unit in the city of, in Douglas County, which means a lot of the fire departments handle small spills, but larger spills, we're on the mutual aid list where they can call us. We're a member of the state emergency response team, which means under Paul Wagner, we signed up for this back in April of this year. At the governor's request, we can send our crews anywhere, and that's anywhere from firefighting to high angle rescue to our weapons of mass destruction team, anywhere in the state. Underneath, basically, what do we have as far as weapons of mass destruction? What do we have? We have lots of stuff. We bought from a grant back in 1998, which is great. We have it out in a fire station out west. We've got it at our disposal to get it to a scene. It covers a wide variety of our personnel and some for the civilians. We've making some arrangements to make that transportation to the scene even better. That's in the planning process right now. That's almost complete. We're running a little short on money, though, in our city budget right now, as you probably already know, which tends to affect my job, especially when the fire chief tells me you have $0 in your budget for next year, other than your salary. Have fun. So that's kind of where we're at. I look for training for my crews. We send them around the country, and the training we get is obviously has to be free. They have to pay for the airline, the hotel, all the reservations, take care of it all up front. And that's the only way we get to our training sites. So I handle the coordination with that, and there's a few different places we go to that have helped in that area. And other than that, we look to our friends at Offutt for some schooling. We tend to take advantage of the knowledgeable people in our community and bring them in for our school. And with that, I think I've probably given you a pretty good overview of what I do, what we do, and I'm going to leave it with there for you guys can pick up the questions from that. And pass it on to, I believe, Carol.
Good afternoon. I hope you're having a good lunch. For us in public health, bioterrorism has become one of the more complex issues that's facing the nation's public health system today. I can tell you that local and state public health in the state of Nebraska have been working on bioterrorism planning since early in 1998. It's the responsibility of public health departments, not only at the local and state level, but at the nation's level, to detect, investigate, and respond to and implement measures to control any kind of a disease outbreak, whether it be bioterrorism related or not. Unlike an explosion or a tornado or maybe a release of gas that we may know is happening immediately, a biologic agent may be invisible, it might be silent, and it might be very difficult to detect in the very beginning. We might see infected persons going to doctor's offices, showing up at their clinics, and being seen by individuals in the healthcare system. And it's all related to the release of a biologic agent that may have occurred anywhere between a week to 3 weeks prior. And as cases of those unexplained illnesses continue to show up at our, you know, at the level of our healthcare facilities, the initial responders to that event, you know, are going to be our emergency rooms, they're going to be our physicians, they're going to be you know, the hospitals, the clinics, and public health personnel that detect the event and report it. And public health officials would then be called upon to investigate the illness and also to identify and implement any control measures that would be necessary to control whatever agent it is that has been released. Now, although the response to bioterrorism is multifaceted, the public health department has some very specific issues that we have to address as a public health agency. The first one, public health's roles in responding to a bioterrorism event include early detection, investigation and control, rapid communication of essential information, vaccine and prophylactic medicine distribution and delivery, and also environmental protection. And just to touch just a little bit on what those roles include, first of all, early detection. Public health plays a very unique role in monitoring the surveillance of the community's health. And rapid and early detection of any kind of a bioterrorism event is essential in order for us to have a prompt and efficient response to it. We are currently reinforcing current surveillance activities and staff. We are ensuring that our laws are in place to accommodate not only reporting of all bioterrorism agents, but also to allow the authority of public health and other governmental agencies to respond to such an event. Our Nebraska law was recently changed to include all the bioterrorism agents, plus the mandatory reporting by hospitals, clinics, et cetera, and physicians of any kind of unusual clusters of disease. We're also working at both the local and the state level to design and implement new surveillance systems, kind of non-traditional surveillance systems, as well as beefing up our current surveillance systems, you know, the mandatory reporting laws, et cetera. So we might be looking at something that's a little non-traditional, taking a look at pharmacy surveillance, maybe taking a look at emergency room surveillance, anything that would indicate to us that there's something unusual going on in the community. We're also responsible for investigation and control, and we have to investigate any health problems that are occurring in the community. And then we have to provide recommendations to the community on how to control what's happening. And in the event of a bioterrorism event, what are we going to do? Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to decide whether this is a naturally occurring event or whether it's bioterrorism related. And that won't be a decision that is made just at the local level. We will be bringing in other individuals, including, you know, state epidemiologists, CDC, probably other governmental and officials that we work with, to determine if we believe that this is a bioterrorism event. If, in fact, it is, we have to characterize the nature of the emergency, determine the extent of the outbreak and who's at risk. We have to outline prevention strategies and get those out to the community in order to avoid any further illnesses. Communication is crucial to ensuring a prompt and coordinated response. This helps to allay public fear. And we are really hoping that the media will be working with us in this situation if it ever occurs in our community. We have two distinct audiences that we'll be responsible for ensuring appropriate updates to. One of those would be information updates, guidelines, and recommendations needed by healthcare professionals and others responding to the emergency. We also have to have information that's going to be disseminated to the public and to the media. Effective public education campaigns, which I'm sure all of you guys know, are really essential to reduce panic in your community. And so, you know, getting out appropriate health information immediately will be crucial in order to serve our public in the best manner possible. And Nebraska, as far as communication is concerned, is in the process right now of developing what is known as their Health Alert Network. And that's the ability for us to rapidly disseminate information among ourselves as well as other governmental entities and get that information out into the healthcare community as soon as possible when we know that something has occurred. Another thing that public health will be responsible for if we have such an event is the distribution and delivery of prophylactic medications and vaccines. And at this point in time, local and state health departments, not only in Nebraska but across the United States, are currently putting into place plans for vaccination and prophylaxis clinics that will serve anywhere from 500 people to your entire population. That is the expectation of public health, that we will be able to, you know, provide these vaccines and prophylactic medicines to any number of individuals up to the whole population of your area. This is a very daunting task, I might say. And the CDC also maintains the National Pharmaceutical Stockpile, which is now known as the Strategic National Stockpile, which that will ensure the availability of life-saving pharmaceuticals, medical materials, you know, after our local and state supplies have been exceeded. And The next thing that public health will be actively involved in is environmental protection. If a bioterrorist incident threatens the environment, the health department will work with other local and state agencies, including the EPA, DEQ, et cetera, to assure the safety of our food, water, and of our soil, and make recommendations about when the area is safe to return to. The public health response, however, is only a small part of a much larger community response, if in fact an event like this should occur. And there is no one agency that can respond on its own. And because of that, I am very thankful that the health department and most of us sitting here have had the opportunity to work with the Omaha Metropolitan Medical Response System, which has been critical in our preparedness in our area. And I'm going to turn this over to Pat Lenahan, who will tell you a little bit more about what the Omaha Metropolitan Medical Response System has been doing in our community.
Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me to be here today. I first of all want to say what an important role that the other three people on the panel play in the Omaha Metropolitan Medical Response System. They have been leaders and advocates for getting our work done, and I appreciate that, and I'm glad they're here to discuss their role in all of that. Some people may be aware of the Metropolitan Medical Response System, others may not. So I just want to kind of give you a statement of what we're all about. The mission of the MMRS is to prepare the local medical, fire, law enforcement, major businesses and government entities, community organizations in the city of Omaha and surrounding community within 25 miles for a planned, integrated, and coordinated response in the event of a natural occurring incident, crisis, disaster, or from a terrorist attack, including nuclear, biological, chemical weapons of mass destruction. So that's kind of our mission statement. How we came to be was in 1998, at the invitation of the Omaha Fire Department, they invited the hospitals to participate in some training related to this. And we attended that training, and at that training, the hospitals all came back and said, gee, we really don't have everything that we need in place. Let's get together as a group. And the hospitals have since started working together back then, but then we integrated other agencies into our work because of the importance of the role that they would play in the healthcare community and in preparation. So we formed a steering committee in 1999 and began the process of assessing our community, how the hospitals were not ready. One of the things we discovered is that the hospitals didn't have decontamination equipment. So if we had someone that came to our hospital with something on their person, on their body, their clothing, and we would need to rinse that off before they entered the hospital, we would not be able to do that. And the likely scenario that would happen would more than likely occur. So we knew that we needed to do a lot of assessing of our facilities and our response plan. So we began that. We participated in a couple of tabletop drills where we actually talked about procedures as we talked about scenarios, and we participated with the fire department in those regards. That helped us get a lot of information, which we then took to the hospital administrative teams and said, you know, when we walk through these chemical tabletops, these biological tabletop drills, we do not have all of the things that we need in place, and it helped us get some buy-in from all of the hospitals. In the year 2000, we looked for some funding, and we knew that there was some funding that was coming out of Washington for healthcare preparedness. And we went after that funding with the help of some of the folks that are sitting here. We went to the mayor and asked for the funding that was coming to the city of Omaha, that we would help coordinate that money to prepare the Omaha community. And we then received the money in August of 2000, and it was handed over to our group. When we talk about our group, I think it's hard to imagine how massive it is, but it includes 40 agencies. And as we got into the deliverables that we have to submit to the government, we kept adding folks, because if there was an objective that we needed to accomplish, we did not want to exclude an agency that was part of that. So we added agencies as we went along and wove them into our steering committee. And just an example, all of the hospitals are involved, as well as, of course, the health department. We have a member of the mayor's office. We have folks from off of Air Force Base. We have the local emergency management, the state and the federal emergency management folks. We have the police department, the FBI, the state patrol, as well as the Veterans Hospital. The fire department, of course, is very important, both county emergency management, the Poison Control Center. The medical society, pathology centers, the coroners involved, critical incident stress management, folks from the state, public works, chamber of commerce. We have a media committee that includes many journalists, members of the media, the National Guard, Safety Council, behavioral health services, veterinarians, public schools, Red Cross. I already mentioned the FBI, the U.S. Attorney's Office, people from the Henry Dorley Zoo, the Humane Society, and some private vendors for health care. And the Nebraska Public Health Lab, those, that's pretty encompasses most of the agencies. We have now we have 9 subcommittees that are doing various aspects of this. One committee is looking at education and training. So we did purchase decontamination equipment for all of the hospitals and some of the other entities. Then we needed to do training. How do we prepare the physicians and nurses to actually implement that equipment? And we have purchased drugs for the community that will be able to respond to nerve agents, and they have been disseminated out to the first responders and the hospitals. We are going to be doing some physician training, nurse training in the fall. Our pharmacy committee has looked at, well, if we have to have so many doses of antibiotics to treat our community, where are we going to get those antibiotics? Do we have them today? And if we don't have them among all the pharmacies, then where can we get them with our suppliers, and can we get them on short order? During, of course, the process of doing the work that we have been doing, we had the event of 9/11, and after that happened, we did get some accelerated directives from Washington, you know, to make sure that we had some things done earlier than we originally anticipated. But we were very lucky in that we had already picked out our vendor for some of these things. As I heard this morning, some of the equipment that we purchased for our community, they're on back order now. You can't even get them. So I'm very pleased to report that we were a little ahead of the game in our work, and so we were able to get some things. Carol's been on the Infection Control Public Health that's been looking at surveillance procedures and response, which she's already told you about. Steve's in charge of our community plan and integrating our work into a long-term plan that will be held with the city. We have a communications committee that's looking at how we're going to communicate with each other, how we can communicate with Carol's department and Brian, and the EOC, which Steve will be in charge of and is in charge of today. Our mental health group is looking at how we respond not only to patients and families, but our healthcare workers. We have a group that is doing media, and we have a group that's looking at alternate care facilities. And why we're doing that is because we know the hospitals will be overwhelmed with victims. If you try to put 3,000 victims in the current hospitals today, you can't do it. What we want to do is have a plan so that the most acute, most critically ill go to the hospitals, and the less severely injured or ill will go to alternate care sites where they will be given treatment, and also the worried well, and they'll include the minor treatment. So that's kind of sums up in a very abbreviated way the work that's been done, and I'm happy to answer questions when we have opportunity at the end. But at this time, I'd like to introduce Steve Lee, who has been there from the very beginning of our MMRS and has been facilitating much of the work that we've been doing. So I'm very pleased to introduce him as the next speaker.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for having me here today. It's a nice opportunity to tell a story to you. My job as director of Douglas County Emergency Management Agency is very fulfilling and challenging in that I end up getting into everyone's business, if you will. I have to coordinate and meet with a lot of people, but my top priority is to be an advisor, if you will, to the elected officials of the cities and Douglas County and to business and industry leaders in terms of areas that involve emergency management. If I were to tell you, if you were to look at Omaha's and the metropolitan area's preparedness in terms of a continuum for 0 to 100, I think we're somewhere probably in the 80s. The good news is that Omaha and the metro area, thanks to the tireless, and I mean tireless efforts and work of Pat Linehan and her co-chair, Phyllis Dutton, who have the incredible responsibility of trying to meld together over 40 different agencies representing 100 people from various strata of government in the private sector, who technically do not have to pay any attention or answer to her, but do in a very cooperative way. I need to tell this story because it doesn't get published enough. There are people who are working in this community who for 3 years have gone well beyond the call of duty in terms of their normal jobs and just an extra after assignment to be associated with the Metropolitan Planning Medical Planning Committee to do a good job for you. Parts of the work we have done have been nationally recognized. Some of the people who are on OMERS have gone to Washington, D.C. to offer advice and guidance on areas that we have developed systems or plans for, and specifically Tony Samble from the Nebraska Public Health Lab, who had some protocol for anthrax, the handling of it, was invited to Washington, D.C. Our pharmaceutical committee people have developed a quick response reference guide for physicians and emergency room and first responders, a color-coded chart to give people some familiarization with what these agents might do and what some of the initial protocol would be. It's been very well received and it's very popular, and so the Omaha metropolitan area was a leader in providing that. So I want to tell you that we're in such good shape that the metropolitan Omaha area, we know where we are, we know where we want to be, and we know what we need to be there. We are actually in the posture of waiting for the state of Nebraska to catch up with us, waiting for the federal government to finish their arguing and assigning of the monies and funds that we're anxious to get here, because we know where we want to go and what we want to do. And I think you can be proud of that fact. Now, I'm not here to say that if something would happen in our community, everything's going to be taken care of. We're still in uncharted territory regarding terrorism and the preparedness for it. Quite frankly, last September, I think we'll all agree we were caught flat-footed. And clearly, it was an awakening for many agencies facing new responsibilities, particularly the public health industry, which quickly realized that in terms of chemical and biological threats, we had a long way to go in terms of educating our people and getting the proper equipment and training to meet these needs. We are well on our way, but it's not an easy concept. Right now, the President's initiative, which is approximately $3.5 billion, they're still arguing whether the Homeland Security is going to exist or not exist, who's going to be in it, who's going to be out of it. In the meantime, we're waiting for these funds, anxiously awaiting. Sometimes what happens in Washington is very mysterious to me. I know of the $3.5 billion, we've just received word that Nebraska is in line to get about $42 million. My math isn't that strong, but I know a billion is a lot, and I know $3.5 billion is even more. And I'm wondering why, if there's only 50 states, why are we only getting $42 million out of $3.5 billion? And then I read we're creating huge runways in Kuwait and Oman and Qatar by hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm not saying we don't need them. We've got a fire department that needs respirators and masks to go into areas that might have potential hazardous materials and chemicals and biological agents. Let's take care of our own people first. At any rate, the $42 million that Nebraska is slated to get, 70% of that is slated to go to local governments. So you'll have entities in the 93 counties in Nebraska vying for these 70% of approximately $42 million. I will be in the process of meeting with these people, and we'll be putting together our wish list, if you will, for what we want, which isn't going to take us but 10 minutes because, as I say, we're ready to go on this. But even if these funds become available and finalized, it's not going to be till 2003, and by the time the distribution is made and you go through all the other hoop jumping that you have to go through to get this money, it will be some time before we're on the road to getting the equipment and advanced training that we so dearly need. If I may go back a little bit, a few months, September 11th, 2001, when this happened, I was home watching television, watching a plane crash into a building, and I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't pay attention to it. I thought I was watching, you know, an action movie where this happened. It just took me a few minutes to realize that that was a real event. I happened to be on the phone with someone when I thought I saw it again. I still didn't believe it, and then it realized me, this is really happening now. I also quickly realized that in the city of Omaha, we have a new administration. Mayor Fahey had only been in office for a couple of months, and that quickly he would probably be inundated and overwhelmed with questions, what's going on, what are we going to do? So We quickly got together an initial staff and had a strategy session to outline a plan for the next 6 to 12 hours of what we thought we would or should do. Now, keep in mind, the Omaha-Douglas County area always has had a plan. It's called a local emergency operations plan. It's what we will do and how we will operate in the event of a mass fatality or casualty, what would happen in a tornado or a flood or a fire. That exists and it has existed. The area of terrorism, even though the plan addresses portions of that, is new to us and we've really never faced it. The circumstances and timelines involving these are different. When you have a tornado, the action has happened and you know where you stand and you know what you have to do. When you're watching two buildings containing thousands of people collapse, you don't know what to do. You don't know if you're next. You don't know if this is the first of many kinds of attacks. You're not sure if you should send people home, keep them at work, who to prepare and call for. Very difficult questions, which we've since addressed, by the way, and I'll get to that in a few minutes. Anyway, we had the meeting, and our assessment that morning was, quite frankly, there's nothing we can do right now except continue to monitor closely what's happening throughout the rest of the United States. It seemed to us that the actions were taking place in what we'll call the Eastern Corridor between New York City and in Washington, D.C. If something were to happen where it seemed like this terrorism was going to spread, or events took place, like we heard of an explosion in Denver or San Francisco, a bridge exploded, or there was some type of a terroristic action taking places in other parts of the countries, we would go into another phase and reassess what we were to do at that time. But for the given, we were going to hold tight, keep the kids in schools, don't let the parents rush to the schools to grab them and take them home, because there wasn't any particular need at that point to do that, and we all agreed. However, if a parent wanted to come to the school, obviously they weren't going to prevent them. If businesses wanted to shut down and go home, we certainly weren't going to chide them or prevent them from doing it. But it was our advice at that time to hold steady, with the exception of Woodman Tower, which evacuated, and who could have blamed them? I mean, even if somebody was said, relax, you know, we've got everything under control, I'm on the stairs going down. It was just a natural human reaction when you're 30 floors up and you're seeing this take place, because we didn't know what to expect the rest of that day. Since that time, we've developed a response and assessment team with the mayor and key public officials, the police chief, the fire chief, our public health agents, people in charge of the Civic Center building, our sheriff's office, where if anything like this would happen again, we would immediately meet and make an assessment as to how we are going to proceed. And we've even got to the point where we've got alternate spots to meet in the event the Civic Center itself is overwhelmed due to either an explosion or an agent and we can't go there or we have to evacuate. So we have several other locations where we can meet and get this assessment going. Our first responders are better prepared than most other first responders for this reason. In 1998, the Congress, which had started to look into the seriousness of the potential for domestic terrorism actions in our country, passed the Nunn-Lugar-Domenici Act, which addressed some funds available to the top 120 cities in the United States for first responder monies. Omaha was on the second tier, and the Omaha Fire Department did receive a grant where they got to start looking at their equipment needs. They were received not nearly enough, as Brian had alluded to. We still need more equipment and personal protection, but it gave us a jump start. And how this really helped us was the after action reports of the two exercises and the full scale exercise we had over a 1.5 year period brought together many of the elements Pat had alluded to, and we got together to make an assessment in a group similar to this, only about four times larger, and we saw all our shortcomings. The medical and public health communities especially saw, you know, we've got doctors, young doctors, they don't know what anthrax is. They've never seen smallpox. They don't know what Lewisite is. They don't know how to respond to these various agents. We knew we had a lot of work to do. Issues that came up that you would never think of. You heard Pat mention a term called worried well. Maybe some of you know what worried well is, but worried well is essentially someone who is perfectly healthy but thinks they aren't. If we had word that there was some agent released through this building, we would all suddenly become worried well people, and the first thing that we would want to do is march to the hospital emergency room or our doctor's office and say, check me. They are getting in the way of people who really need help and assistance, And if you compound that with emergency room staff and physicians who don't know the signs or symptoms of what it could be, it's a mess. So we have to worry about that. What if it's a real event and it did happen? We don't have enough personnel to take care of them. What if they're contaminated? We have plans to bring in other people from other states and other cities. You just can't march them in. You have to register them, check their credentials, get them set up. They need to know where to go. I don't want to take a lot of time, but I want to stress to you that this planning for this is not an easy event. It takes a lot of coordination, a lot of time, and unfortunately a lot of money, which I'm going to say again, we're waiting for. So please write your letters and tell them to get it here. So I'll stop beyond there, and I'll just say that Omaha is in good shape. We're ahead of the state of Nebraska. We're ahead of most cities. We're not perfect, but at least we have our bearings down perfectly. And I think a lot of that credit must go to the Omaha Metropolitan Medical Response System and the diligence and hardworking people represented on either side of me who are pushing this thing forward, sometimes in an obnoxious fashion, irritating many people, but we're going to get the job done. And with that, I'll shut up for a while, and we'll open ourselves to your criticisms.
Thank you, Steve. We have a lot of questions here. We have about 25 minutes, so we'll try to get through them all. Most of these are not addressed to anybody specifically, so whoever has the answer, come in with it, please. Shouldn't all healthcare professionals be vaccinated now against the biological agents that are most likely to be used?
I can answer that to a certain extent. At this point in time, the CDC is looking at how are we going to prepare our healthcare providers and our first responders, particularly in the event of a smallpox release. I can tell you at this point in time, the state of Nebraska drew together an advisory team on the 15th of this month to kind of identify who the first strike teams are within the state of Nebraska, because it looks like the state of Nebraska is going to get anywhere from 500 to 1,500 doses of vaccine fairly soon. I don't know for sure when. And at that point in time, what the state of Nebraska wants to do is to ensure that those individuals, or that there are individuals in our community and in our state who can, number one, treat and diagnose individuals who may be sick and can respond, you know, in the fashion that we need to respond. So they worked with the bioethicists, did come up with kind of how that vaccine would be distributed. They have also indicated to us in public health that we should be putting together plans for the mass vaccination of, you know, our communities. I don't think that's going to happen in any, you know, near future, but what they want our communities to be is prepared to do so if, in fact, a case of smallpox would be identified. And so the issues of getting our healthcare providers and our first responders vaccinated and ready to respond to a potential case of smallpox is being addressed. Are the plans all in place? No, but it is being worked on at the national, state, and local levels.
Thank you. Warren Buffett was quoted recently as saying the most likely terrorist attack in the future may be the introduction of a biohazard or toxin into the ventilation system of a large building. What procedures are in place to handle such an emergency locally? Anybody?
I think that's going to come my direction. We addressed some of this stuff with the Omaha Safety Council back in November. They had a Safety Council meeting for a lot of the business community. And basically it came down to, with recommendations from the police department and the fire department, was be familiar with your own ventilation system. It was an education system among the business people in the community who are concerned. Right now, it was a very good discussion as far as security measures, things to look out for, things to have rewired, things to security, people that have security at their site, how they could readjust their security, ways to monitor it, whether through camera, video. You know, once again, you know, that's a very, very costly item. You know, things weren't designed for this years ago. I mean, you're looking at buildings 30, 40 years old, trying to update it and say, make this so-called terrorist proof. And the business community is really not in that situation to do that. The new buildings that they are building look at that. They go that direction. As far as the fire departments and the police department, our recommendations, we're still working through the safety council to make this aware to the businesses. They come to us. We get phone calls occasionally. They come to me. Is what they can do. I don't know how we can answer that question anymore other than that's a tough issue. It's also a very financial issue that's high because the cost of making those protections is high.
We have two questions regarding communications. Do local, state, and federal officials meet periodically to improve their communications in the event of attack? And in various emergencies, how will the public be notified and given instructions?
I'll answer part of that, and then Carol and Brian and Pat can all jump in because that's plans we're working on. Initially, the answer is yes. Of course, the public officials get together to talk about how to improve communications, although sometimes I don't think we hear each other very well when we're talking. But nevertheless, Omaha is about ready to launch its 800 megahertz system, which will be a boon for communications abilities for first responders and ancillary support people in our community. It will assure that when people like the State Patrol and the fire department, various rural fire departments and other first responder agencies with rescue squads and so forth come into our area to address disasters and fires and respond to other such incidents, they will be able to be patched together to talk with one another. That will be a first, and it will be obviously a long way towards saving lives and time. And what we're working on right now, and I'll let Pat take over for this, we're trying to enhance our communications from the EOC to our hospitals and among our hospitals. And Pat, would you mention how we're doing there?
Yeah, our communications committee is working on redundant communication. Well, if all our communication systems went down today, what would we use? And what we want is a kind of fail-safe, something that we know we'd be able to communicate with the essential people, which would be the hospitals, the EOC, the health department, the fire department. There is a plan on the table that we, as partially funded, that we will be bringing forward that includes the use of ham-operated radios in addition to the new 800 megahertz system. The other thing that we will be doing is getting communication out through our media committee. We have a media committee that is working on aspects of how they could be helpful to us and how we could be helpful to them. We will have pre-scripted messages. We'll ask them to deliver to the public. To help the public understand what's going on and where do they get treatment and to really facilitate care. The other thing that then we will provide for them is expertise. We will try to provide experts in our community that would be able to address what's going on, as well as patients and families that would be able to converse with the media in a public way. We are hoping to have media sites where we'll host the national and the regional and local media at those sites. And we've picked out 5 sites now. We're looking at memorandums of understanding to do that. So that's kind of how we'll handle our communication.
One of the system that we're looking at from the Emergency Operating Center to the hospitals and among the hospitals, it's through the volunteers again. Volunteers giving of their time and their energy. It's called APRS. It's the ability to wire or to send a message wireless back and forth to each other. All we need is electricity to do so. And since the EOC has emergency backup generators and it's a federal requirement that hospitals do as well, that will go a long way towards ensuring communications between the Emergency Operating Center and the hospitals, and hopefully as we go along and get some of the dollars, we'll assure that communications between the hospital as well. I wish I could explain to you how this works, but as I like to tell people, I'm an analog man in a digital world, and the best way for me to explain this is a cartoon I saw years ago where it's 2 or 3 Einstein-like characters standing in front of a chalkboard with huge fancy formulas going along, and then kind of a circle that says equal, and on the other side the formula continues. Well, the magic words in the center of the circle is A plus B, blah, 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 equal that. It just says, and a miracle occurs, and then you go on with the rest of it. That's how this happens. They perform a miracle through the Amateur Radio Club, and we're able to talk to each other.
I also want to respond a little bit on communications from the public health aspect. public health has, you know, there are public health dollars coming into the state of Nebraska. One of the key focus areas is communication along with the Health Alert Network. And the Health Alert Network is the ability of public health to respond very quickly, not only to other public health agencies, also to our you know, partners that are doing first response and the physician community with important public health messages. Another piece of that is rapid communication and training and risk communication issues, and there are dollars from the federal funding that's coming through that are being targeted into these areas. So both local and state public health are working on the issues of communication, not only among themselves, not only with our partners here, but also with how do we best respond to the media and how do we best respond to the public, and ensuring that we have very strong, well-trained individuals who can respond in these types of situations.
We're just going to take a moment here, and we're going to look at, from the fire department perspective, what our communication level is. Steve touched on the big part on how we interact around here, but from my perspective, I look at how can we get the help we need to supplement what we have. In other words, when we are overwhelmed, which will occur within minutes if it's major, who do we look for the help, and how can we get it, and how soon will it come? There's a lot of backup plans in place. Steve's got his route. We go through Steve. He goes to the state. The state goes to the federal government. We can get the National Guard. We can get community support teams from Iowa, from around the National Guard units. But those all come at presidential declarations. From my level, I've got 800 numbers to national support. Basically, it's an 800 number that we call. It's a kind of an alert all number the government set up for us through the fire departments that kind of puts the heads up to all the federal agencies that when Steve's order goes through, my order's already gone through from the other way, and it kind of all ties it together to make sure a lot of people get called. We've all got backdoor numbers so we can call in advance to groups that we know of to alert them and say, hey, you're going to be getting this call. Can you get your people together because this is real? And we're hoping to take that response time from 4 hours for some things and bring it down to an hour and a half or 2 hours as long as we call the right people and soon enough. So. But it's all in how the problem is detected, whether it's biological, does it noticed at the hospital level, is it passed through the state through Carol, or is it something that the 911 dispatchers have picked up because we're picking up a whole lot of people from this one area or this one business, or is it major, is it citywide, or is it just coming out of the airport? You know, there's a lot of things that come into play on communication, and that's where this whole group comes together.
What steps have been implemented to protect our water supply?
Well, I'll just have to speak for MUD in this case, and of course my comments won't be official. They're just knowledge that I have from having worked with them and talked with them. Obviously, they've increased their security, and that's just about all they can do right now is monitor more closely those areas where agents might be slipped into the water system. I feel pretty confident that with camera usage and increased training of people and guards at OPPD sites and facilities who watch this, I'm not going to say we don't have anything to worry about because there are a lot of reports of people who are suspiciously hanging around nuclear power plant facilities, electrical facilities, and water plants throughout the water treatment facilities throughout the United States, taking pictures, acting strangely, walking around. They're monitored and followed through. So we are being watched as we sit here. I mean, there are people in our country still trying to figure out ways to penetrate us and cause a little havoc. But I'm pretty much convinced within our community that we're doing the utmost that we can to protect our water and drinking facilities. There's a national alert that they share information back and forth, and they're constantly training and going over how they can tighten the security even further. So I would feel reasonably confident about that. But I would also have bottled water at home, as you should anyway, just as an emergency measure. I wanted to ask Carol, you've mentioned the term surveillance a couple of times, and to idiots like me, surveillance means, you know, looking out for people. What does it mean medically and in the pharmaceutical world? What does that mean?
Surveillance basically means to monitor. You know, you watch data where you're able to monitor whether something is that, you know what normally happens. And since you know what normally happens through regular ongoing monitoring, you also know when something is out of the ordinary, when it's above the endemic level. And that's basically what surveillance is.
A follow-up question just came in. What should individual citizens and families do to be prepared? What supplies, in addition to water, should we have on hand?
I'll answer that first because I'm like a broken record with this, and people are tired of hearing it, and they don't want to listen because it is the simplest thing you can do. My recommendation in today's society is this. You have a kit that allows you to take care of your needs and your family's needs for up to 5 days. What's in this kit is up to you, but clearly you want clothes that you can change rapidly and can be washed and dried quickly. You want extra medicines, extra copies of records, or things that you think are important, obviously food and water supplies, and a system that will assure some heat and some light and the ability to communicate. I mean, this sounds so simple, but if I was really honest and asked how many of you to raise your hands if you had it, none of you would. Just like even in Nebraska, we don't carry winter storm kits. I do because I don't want to be – somebody's going to ask me someday, and I don't want to be embarrassed. I have this big leather satchel in my trunk full of winter supply stuff, and that's the only reason I have it. But you really should do this. On the other hand, you should also have another kit that if something would happen where you would have to be away from your home for 5 days, that should be available too. It might be the same or it might be different. Included in that kit would also be conversations with your family or your friends or those you deem most important. As let me just paint the picture this way. Something happens in Omaha biologically or chemically to the degree where you've got to leave. You're at work, and for whatever reason, it says you can't go home. You're not going to be able to get into your neighborhood. Something's in the air. Something's going on. You've got to go somewhere, and it looks like it might be that way for several days. The easiest way to have covered that is simply to have had that conversation with your family first and say, in case that happens, here's where we will meet. Now, don't say the Holiday Inn in Lincoln, because everybody's going to go to the Holiday Inn in Lincoln. Pick Grandma and Grandpa's Triple R Ranch in Hoopdale, Nebraska, or something like that, someplace that you know there's probably not going to be thousands of people who will go there. But if you really do are in a position where you can't meet them, everybody will know, I can't find them. I don't know where they are. Here's where we will meet. It sounds far-fetched, I realize, but it's a simple plan that answers the question. Now, whether it's your grandma in Illinois or Dale's relatives in Minnesota, he'll be happy to host you, I'm sure, if you want to come up there. But just talk this out and put it in the plan. If you do those two things, you'll be doing as much as you can to protect yourself. The only other thing I want to comment on quickly, everybody asked, do we need breathing apparatus and gas masks and protective agents and so forth? I would say not to at this time. It's too complicated. Then they're expensive, and there's a little bit of controversy on when you would use them and how they would use them. But I would advise you to call the Red Cross or my office and get some quick advice on how to make a safe room in your house, which is simply duct tape and plastic to put over windows and vents for a temporary short period of time that would be of a great help in certain kinds of situations.
Steve, you mentioned the Red Cross. It says here, as the American Red Cross is certainly a part of response to disaster, what other groups, organizations are there that we can volunteer to learn in advance to be available to help in the event of a possible attack?
Well, The Red Cross and the Salvation Army are obviously two of the largest that you can go to offer your services. Your local church, I'm sure, will have some type of a voluntary system that you can get involved with. If you want to volunteer your time and you don't know where, either call the Red Cross or call United Way of the Midlands, and they will provide you with many different associations and outlets that might be able to use your services. I know nationally, we have, I can't keep track of them. There's one or two federal initiatives, the Spirit Corps of America, something like that, where the president has asked people to call offices like mine and volunteer, but we haven't got any guideline or directive on that yet, too. It's some more of that federal talk about let's all get busy and get involved, but they haven't given us any detail on how to do this yet. When people call to ask, they want to volunteer to emergency management or civil defense, I do the same thing. I say, really, we're a big enough community where we have professional people that take care of a lot of things, but we have a lot of volunteer organizations that we depend on, and your services would be best utilized through them. Most hospitals have volunteer corps and auxiliary units, too, that can take the services of clergy, ministry, maybe some aspect of public health and counseling and guidance. So there's plenty of venues for it. If you really want to volunteer, I can give you a list and help you on your way. But right now, nationally, there's no program in the Omaha area that I could turn you to get involved. But there are still plenty of places where you could work.
How would the nursing shortage affect treatment of the masses in case of an emergency?
Well, I'm a nurse, and I also am on the Center for Nursing Board for the state of Nebraska, which is looking at the nursing shortage. And we do have a nursing shortage in Nebraska, as we do nationwide. There are federal and state initiatives to try to help curb the supply, or to help enhance the supply by scholarships, some through that go through schools of nursing, some goes to individuals, to help get more people recruited into nursing, and then as they work in nursing, their loans cancel. So there's some wonderful programs out there. Would it be a problem? I think from a prophylaxis perspective, I'll let Carol address that. But from a response, you know, during a disaster, and I've been involved in several disasters here in town. I've been an emergency nurse. I was here when the tornado was hit, floods, and you readily get people to voluntarily come in. You know, we don't have a problem. 90% to 95% of your staff will come in, make themselves available. When you're talking about something that's contagious, like smallpox or tularemia, we don't know what the response rate will be. And so I'm a little bit more worried about making sure that we're able to protect and give information to employees about what's going on so that they will want to come in, protect themselves, protect their family. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. I don't think the nursing shortage in itself will be that huge of an impact at this time, because most of us will come to the table and will be working and be able to help out in a disaster just like we've done in the past. So I know we will need help in vaccinations and that kind of thing, and a lot of nurses have not been trained to give the smallpox vaccination, so that will be an issue.
And just to make a couple comments on that, like I said, if we have a pre-event situation where we have to get large, and then this is outside of an event, and have to vaccinate or need to vaccinate individuals, if you're not vaccinating your entire community. At this point in time, you know, public health has identified nurses and some other agencies who will assist us in providing the bodies that are necessary to administer vaccine or prophylaxis. Where we might, you know, and what we're really doing some work on right now is in the event that we have a very large-scale situation where we may need to do prophylaxis or vaccine administration to greater than 10,000 individuals in a very short period of time. Now, we are doing some work here and trying to identify where we could come up with human resources to assist with that, because, you know, the health department does not have a very large staff here in the Omaha area. So we're working with people, including Brian and like the Visiting Nurses Association and some other places, to try to see, you know, where might we be able to come up with some additional help, obviously with them being trained in advance.
We're down to the last 2 minutes here, and so if you have a question, please keep the answer as brief as possible. And this is addressed to Brian. What type of training is offered or has been done for first responders, such as police officers and public works personnel, for the hazard materials or WMD scenes?
For the police officers, I can't answer fully on that, but and also for public works. But I do know that back in May, I set up a class from the EPA that we both trained together. It involved public works and the police department and fire department, where we trained about 30 personnel to be hazardous material technicians, where we worked together, able to enter hazardous areas, whether it be chemicals or biological agents or whatever. The group of us trained together, and that involved the police clandestine lab unit, their emergency response unit, along with fire personnel and public works. The fire department personnel and also police, have been given the opportunity. We go to Anniston, Alabama, to the, they call it the Cobra School down there, where we go in and we, it's a four-day class through the Department of Justice program where we do training with actual live nerve agents. We go into buildings that are closed up and they're in there, and if you make a mistake, you hope the drugs work because you're going to need them. We also know that the police use, down in New Mexico, they have training for terroristic bombs and stuff like that. I'm working on getting fire department personnel to attend that along with the police. There's also radiological schools out in Nevada that are excellent. I have personnel leaving here in October for that school. So I think we're moving forward. As far as public works, I can't answer for them other than the school they are involved with us.
Half a minute response to this question. Are there evacuation plans in place if needed?
Yeah, we have evacuation plans. Some of it's based on the old nuclear days where we wanted to get out of the area and suggest that you go to other cities and towns. They're not, you know, perfectly concrete, but we do have plans in terms of being able to publicly announce to you that we want you to leave the area, and we have plans to make sure that the areas that we want you to travel on will be clear and free, and you'll be able to get out of here as fast as possible. So those plans are in place, and they've been thought of.
We've gotten to most of the questions. There are some left over. I will leave them for you to ponder for future panels. Folks, we thank you. A sincere thanks to our four panelists today: Steve Lee, Emergency Management Director for Douglas County; Carol Allensworth, Division Chief of the County Health Department; Pat Lenahan, Chair of the Metropolitan Medical Response System; and Brian Sorensen, Special Operations Bureau Chief of the Omaha Fire Department.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's topic was local preparedness for terrorism. The members of the panel included Carol Allensworth, Division Chief of the Douglas County Health Department; Steve Lee, Director of the Douglas County Emergency Management Agency; Pat Lenahan, Chairwoman of the Omaha Metropolitan Medical Response Team; and Brian Sorensen, Battalion Chief in the Special Operations Bureau of the Omaha Fire Department. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, August 22, 2002, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Dale Munson for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. The next forum will be Thursday, September 19th at 12 noon. At that time, we'll hear a debate on legalized gambling in Nebraska. If you'd like to attend this or other future forums, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.